New Japan is so pissed off at AEW wrestlers. They all were outside. There was a food truck outside. All the New Japan wrestlers, they were nowhere to be found. Umino early. Oh, I got hit with a fireball. Nowhere to be found. Tony Khan, you should have waited a week. This was Blood and Guts from year past. And what a difference. Talk about builds. Guys, gals, please. I enjoyed tonight's show. I got to put that right out there. I enjoyed tonight's show. If you're an AEW fan, you enjoyed tonight's show because all your wrestlers did a damn good job in the ring. You got to see some people we never heard of before, some that we have heard but don't normally see. We saw some wrestlers fulfill bucket lists as far as matches go. But, you know, let's also keep things in perspective. I am very happy to see Claudio, the former Cesaro, in AEW. And yeah, and I appreciate, what did Big Sal say at the very end of this? Oh, that's a little too small. What did he say? I still like your Garcia idea better. See, I wanted Daniel Garcia to be the person as the mystery partner, mystery opponent for Zack Sabre Jr., newest member of the Blackpool Combat Club. Because me, I think that is a better position for Daniel Garcia to be in instead of being lost in the shuffle with the Jericho Appreciation Society. You want to start elevating talent that the fans pop for, not just who Tony Khan pops for. And Daniel Garcia, Willie Yuta, John Moxley, Brian Danielson, nice blend. Two veterans, two younger stars. And what did I say the other day? If Cesaro, Claudio, Cesaro, whatever you want to call him, if he becomes a member of the Blackpool Combat Club, now you got Moxley, now you got Danielson, now you got Claudio, and I don't care how many people try to convince this that Wheeler Yuta is this big mega star. He could walk down there with the Ring of Honor TV title, independent title, heavyweight title, cruiserweight title, women's title. Hell, he could go Ultimo Dragon and a great Sasuke, come out with 9 belts. He's starting to look like when Maven hung out with Evolution. Do you remember that? When Maven hung out with Evolution? So don't get me wrong. I absolutely love that Claudio is going to be in AEW. But let's be a little realistic here. You see what happens. This is the Cracker Jack surprise. Everybody loves surprises. You see what I did Saturday? I totally destroyed a box here, and there's styrofoam everywhere here still. You know, oh my God, let me open the surprise. It's Christmas. Ooh, what toy am I going to get today? What surprise? And then 2 days later, it's on the shelf, and it just is there with everything else. As I think Big Sal said earlier, hey, he sent me a 10 spot. Of course I'm going to acknowledge him. Why do I not see his comment? Did I accidentally close it? I don't know what the hell happened here. Wow. Don't send any super chats tonight, everyone. They disappeared. I swear to God, it freaking disappeared. Wow. All right. Well, anyway. Somebody's trying to jinx me here. Yeah, it's gone. I don't know what the hell happened, but it disappeared. Well, anyway, the bottom line is this. You know, he debuts. Look at the very end of Forbidden Door tonight. Look at the very end. It went right back to Dynamite, trying to salvage the fact that there's been zero build, pretty much, for Blood and Guts. And watch the crowd when Claudio, Cesaro, whatever you want to call him, runs down that rampway. There is no fucking reaction until he starts brawling with Jericho. I mean, let's keep things in perspective here a little bit. So I am excited. But when you really start breaking, is this because it's so they can go for trios titles later? and maybe Wheeler Yuta is not cut to be a trios champion, that it's going to be Moxley, Danielson, Claudio as a trios? Does everything have to be in threes? Deaths and tag teams in AE, everything's got to be in threes. So I love that Claudio is going to get the love and appreciation from fans. I appreciate that he is probably going to have more fun in AEW. But let's keep things in perspective a little bit. What happens 6 months from now, a month from now, 3 months from now? As Big Sal was saying earlier, tell me how Cesaro, Claudio, is going to go further in AEW than he did in WWE. Look, when he was in WWE, we don't need to revisit it. I complained a lot. Do you remember, please, I beg you, if you're bored tonight, go check out my pay-per-view recap when Roman Reigns took on Cesaro. And you'll hear me at the beginning of that show say, wow, you know, as soon as Cesaro lost, it's like he can't even walk to the back and soak in the thank you chants for the fans. He got his ass kicked. It's like WWE's like, all right, for all the bitchers and complainers out there that always say Cesaro never gets a title shot, all right, here you go. You got Roman Reigns. As soon as Roman Reigns pinned him, that's it. Fuck everybody. That's what it felt like. That's exactly what it felt like. But let's be honest. You tell me how Cesaro is going to go further in AEW. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe that doesn't matter. Because I said that about Adam Cole a long time ago. Now the in thing now is to talk about Adam Cole's small physique. We talked about that a year ago. If Adam Cole is happy working with a significant other, having a lighter schedule, having a mental balance between work and play, and his quality of life is better, am I one to complain? As a selfish wrestling fan, yeah, I might complain. But shouldn't I be nothing but happy for Adam Cole? So maybe we have to say the same about Claudio. So, all right, a couple other things. Yeah, Kavan says, how's about that Keith Lee run? Exactly. Exactly. Now, this is a pay-per-view recap in 60. I will do my hardest to get this done in 60 minutes. Do not expect me to go through, and I vowed that I was not going to take detailed notes tonight. I still ended up taking 7 pages, 8 pages of notes. So, you know, too much, too drawn out, but I want to say something else tonight before we get into the match results, okay? Again, I enjoyed this pay-per-view very much. On a scale of 1 to 10, I give it a solid 8. Give it a solid 8. But a couple of things that I have to talk about. One has to do with a referee, and one has to do about the overall event itself. Anybody take notice, with the exception of the Cracker Jack surprise, which was Claudio tonight? Anybody take notice that Orange Cassidy seems to be getting the loudest pop crowd reaction from the crowd? Is anybody starting to figure out why that is? There was a lack of heat tonight from that crowd. Now, I'm not talking about temperature or smelly armpits. I'm talking about heat from, this is This is AEW versus New Japan. You would think that there'd be more of a hardcore pride factor, that you root for the AEW stars. But even the AEW stars that were heels, okay, you want to cheer for some of the Japanese wrestlers. I mean, my God, tonight, El Desperado, Clark Connors, I enjoyed them. I thought they did a great fucking job. And I don't have to look at notes for that. See, I remember those names. I never talked about them before. But overall, tonight was a video game night. It didn't matter, unless you were Sammy Guevara or QT Marshall, because we have to pronounce his name correctly. I've had a couple of complaints about that. Unless you're Sammy Guevara or QT Marshall, if you had a great match tonight, whether you're supposed to be a big-time heel or not, this is awesome. Fight forever. Yay, yay, yay. Yay, yay, yay. You know, that's what happens when you're in a video game. Doesn't matter if you select the quintessential good guy or the quintessential bad guy. If it is a good quality game, man, let's fight forever. Fight Forever. Don't you want your favorites to win the fucking match? Fight Forever. Fight Forever. Here's another thing. Please. I know it is politically incorrect to say this. And you know the Cool Kids Club online will not complain about this because they don't want to lose clout. All of those people desperately trying to rub those elbows, then they do it, but they look like they're doing a chicken dance in the meantime. Hey, Tony, look at me. Tony, look at me. Rubbing elbows. They're not going to say it. And I don't care. It's nothing personal against this guy. I mean, I see every so often when someone in AEW starts to get complaints and it sucks and it might just be coincidental. You know, I notice that there's always the MH post that gets posted. And are we supposed to feel guilty to criticize someone because they're in a bad place right now? Please, please get Paul Turner off my fucking screen. It's not just how many botches he did tonight. I mean, yeah, everybody makes a mistake. One, two, three, four, five. And it wasn't just counts tonight. Go back and watch Orange Cassidy versus Will Ospreay. When Will Ospreay was in the corner and something was going on with that corner camera, just go back and just watch Paul Turner in that whole sequence. I mean, we used to joke about Aubrey Edwards with her surfing and this and that. Look at this guy. Look at how many times he fucked up tonight. Why wasn't there New Japan Pro Wrestling referees tonight? Don't you think that communications barrier would have helped some of these stars? If a New Japan Tag Team Championship or Jay White's championship, the IWGP championship. Why don't we have Japanese referees? This motherfucker got so many high-profile matches tonight, and every single one. It's almost like he was smoking Babanya in the back and was saying to someone, oh, if you thought I fucked up now, wait till you see what I do later. Oh, dude, nobody cares. That's the problem. Nobody cares. I wrote it tonight. Oh, DT, come on. It was a good pay-per-view. So am I supposed to just be stoned when I watch this stuff? Am I supposed to just be like, yo, dude, that was fucking awesome. Dude, bro, dude. Oh, man, this guy sucks. And, you know, I wrote this on Twitter tonight. I don't care who I piss off. I don't care anymore. But this is not new. You know, I'm not a fan of the botch videos that are online. I don't like the AEW botch videos, especially the younger guys, because, you know, a lot of this should not be even on YouTube with AEW. They just put it out there because I think it's just laziness. But there's a lot of wrestlers who are up and coming, and it's horrendous. And they put it out there, and then you got everybody flocks to get it because, look, it's material. Some of these YouTubes and social media accounts stay alive because of botches. So I'm not a fan of those botch videos, but it blows me away that no one has come up with Paul Turner's greatest hits going back to his Ring of Honor days. This guy is awful. And, you know, the sad thing about it is that you'll start seeing the pattern. You know, we don't bring this up too often, but now I'm bringing it up tonight. You keep your eyes open. You're going to start seeing the pattern. When the heat starts piling up on someone, you'll start seeing, hey, everybody, look, you know, I'm in a bad place right now. Ooh, I'm so sorry. Oh, and look, I believe that 99% of everyone out there is honest when they do that. But there's a lot of people that make it very, very calculated. When the going gets rough, the going gets tough, the tough get going. When the going gets tough, let me put one of those I'm in a bad place posts out there. And then we're supposed to, he's in a bad place. Sorry. I mean, I know a ton of people in sports, in personal life, doing, you know, pressure jobs, things where it's life or death and construction this and that. And I know there's some people out there that are in a bad fucking place. And I don't see them totally fucking up and like, yo, bro, I'm in a bad place. You know, I mean, all right. But, you know, get better. This is going back to the guy's Ring of Honor days. This is not Tony Khan's Ring of Honor. This is years and years and years. All right, enough of him. We're doing this in 60. We got 45 minutes. So, oh, I have to say one more thing. Some of you out there sometimes should do a simple Google search or Wikipedia. I actually took a clip from Wikipedia today because I wanted to read it word for word. I don't want to make a mistake. But Shibata showed up tonight in AEW. And you saw quite a few people tweeting that if Shibata shows up tonight, I'm going to cry. If you do a Google search and search his name, you'll see a lot of posts going back to 2019. If Shibata shows up, I'm going to cry. A lot of people were like, grow the fuck up, man. Grow up, this and that. And they have no clue. This man arguably almost lost his life a couple of years ago. We talked about it when it happened. And this man has had a struggle to get back. And believe me, that emotional connection, I would arguably say that I think U.S. wrestling fans probably beloved Shibata a hell of a lot more than they do towards Okada or any other Japanese wrestler out there right now. So if you wrote something because you thought you would get the LOL, LMFAOs and the, you know, cute, hysterically laughing emojis from others out there, this is one time you might want to just delete it and maybe do a little research and understand what happened to this man. That was a big fucking deal tonight. And it was really, really cool to see that guy. So wanted to make mention of that because there's a lot of people out there that have no idea what happened to Shibata. And when that pop happened, you know, we said it last week when Aussie Open came out. Holy shit my ass. You know, AEW fans know that if Tony Khan's going to bring somebody in with theme music from New Japan to make a run-in, babyface especially, that it's probably going to be somebody big. So you don't know who the fuck the person is. And you get a lot of people that'll just chant it anyway. You know, but in a case like this, I guarantee you that reaction tonight was not just showing respect to a New Japan wrestler that showed up tonight. No, that was a boatload of people who do know about Shibata and his story. And that was pretty cool tonight. So, see, I'm not an entire dick, everybody. You know, I'm just honest, just a little honest. All right, before we get into match results, two other announcements. AEW All Out will be coming to Chicago September 4th, 2022, and it appears it will take place at the Now Arena. Sorry, I had to take a sip of water. All Out, September 4th, 2022. Mark it down on your calendars. Give props to that Chicago crowd, man. I mean, if you ever have a wrestling event in Chicago and the crowd sucks, I guarantee it's not because the crowd was just tired. If you have a dead crowd in New York, or I should say the Garden, or you have a dead crowd in Chicago and some other places, trust me, it's probably because you provided a really crappy product. That crowd was awesome tonight. That crowd was awesome. All right, the second announcement, AEW Grand Slam. It's going to take place September 22nd, 2021 at Arthur Ashe, excuse me, September 22nd. It happened September 22nd, 2021. It is returning this year in September 2022. Did I write down the date? Yeah. oh, it might actually, wait, could it be September 21st again? Hold on a second, because 10th is a Saturday, because I'm going on my honeymoon that Saturday. I'm getting married on Saturday the 3rd. So, yeah, no, Wednesday would be the 14th. Yeah, yeah. So it's probably the 21st. Yeah, it's probably September 21st. That kind of sucks for yours truly, because I'm going on a honeymoon September 10th to the 18th, and then September 23rd, I'm supposed to get the radiation seeds put in. So who knows? Maybe a few people will invite me to go to AEW this time around in New York, Queens, 5 minutes from my house. The day before, I'm supposed to go in and get radiation bullshit. So we'll see. So thank you. Thank you. I'm sure you're congratulating me about the honeymoon and not about radiation. So, all right. So we got those two announcements out of the way. So let's talk about it. One last thing. Don't forget, we talked about it yesterday on the Don Tony Show. Yesterday was a wild, wild show. I don't do this for cheap plugs, but if you want to check out a wild show, it was like kind of like Don Tony 2022 meets 2006 Don Tony. It was a pretty wild night yesterday. So when I go like this, if you want to go check it out, cheap plug, it was pretty fucking good. But we talked yesterday about Takahashi being removed from the Dudes with Attitudes versus the Bullet Club tag match because he had a 100-plus fever in Japan. And protocol in Japan is that if you have a fever, even if it's not COVID, you're denied travel. So even if Takahashi ends up he didn't have COVID, because he had that fever, the airports in Japan will not allow him to fly to the United States. That's why he did not appear. So in case you didn't tune into yesterday's show, now you know. And as we said yesterday, get that tongue in your mouth. I Googled so many pictures to put up a nice one of Takahashi, and every one is like, imagine if I have the GIF file, it'd be like this. My audio only friends out there will appreciate what I just did because they didn't have to see that. All right, this is your Forbidden Door post-show review. We're 22 minutes in. Let's recap this shit. We had four, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4 buy-in matches. I tell you, overall tonight, and I got to be straight up with this, I think AEW, under the circumstances, almost 50 wrestlers, I think they did a excellent job managing time tonight. I personally think Cesaro's match, Claudio's match, probably could have gone a couple of minutes sooner. If it took them 20 fucking minutes to beat Zack Sabre Jr., you know, I mean, don't you think like he should have had maybe more of a dominant win going into the Blackpool Combat Club fighting the Jericho Appreciation Society? It almost went 20 minutes. In fact, the shortest match tonight, not counting the buy-in, I think, was the women's match. I think they got 10 minutes, but a lot of matches went over 16 minutes tonight. But we had numerous buy-in matches tonight. Taz, Excalibur, and Kevin Kelly on commentary. Now, we thought that was going to be your team for the entire night. We did get Jim Ross for a little while. We did get Tony Schiavone for a little while. We had a few, so we'll get into them a little bit later. But the buy-in, you had Takuro Shibata, Justin Roberts doing bilingual introductions, which was pretty cool. By the way, I loved the Japanese introductions when we got to the last two matches tonight. I love that, man. I'm not making fun of them. I fucking love their... I love the Japanese introductions, and I love Spanish commentary. Spanish commentary sounds like a soccer game every time. But when I impersonate them, it sounds like I'm saying puto 1,000 times. Puto, 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 puto! I love it. My fiance is probably saying, what the fuck is he doing in here? Anyway, Yoshihashi and Hiroki Goto over Aaron Solo and QT Marshall. Match was okay, a little difficult in the communication department at times. If you look closely, you'll see Hiroki Goto a couple of times. Maybe Aaron Solo was just being a little bit slow. Maybe he should be Aaron Slow-Mo instead of Aaron Solo, because we saw Goto a couple of times. Huh? Pick it up. Let's go. Let's have LFG. LFG. That's what everybody does now. Oh, Brother Guts. LFG. LFG. Anyway, QT Marshall, I never saw him attempt a 450 splash, but he did tonight. No water in the pool. Hot tag to Goto. Goto takes out QT Marshall with the Ushiguroshi. Then Goto and Hashi hit the double team maneuver on Aaron Slow-Mo for the win. Not a bad opening match. Crowd was into it. You could see this crowd was going to be a hot crowd tonight. You know, but remember, we had four buy-in matches tonight. Oh, that's funny. I'm sorry. I don't have Nick Camarato versus Lance Archer's graphic because we found out about that match literally minutes before it started. Lance Archer beat Nick Camarato. For people I don't know, if anyone out there is going to be like, what the fuck do we even need this match for? Believe me when I tell you, New Japan, Japanese wrestling, loves Lance Archer. Lance Archer kicks ass in Japan. I see people that are like, with Claudio tonight, oh, now we're going to see the real Claudio and not that WWE shit. Well, you go watch Lance Archer in Japan and then you tell me what the fuck is he doing AEW. He does climb, you know, walking the rope and doing the moonsault. Absolutely. But there's a ton of other shit that Lance Archer does in Japan that never makes AEW TV. So, you know, do a little research before you shit on. I'm not defending WWE, but I'm just saying it doesn't escape AEW either. This match started off very, very sloppy. It was a little goofy at first because Camarado charged Lance Archer as soon as the bell hit, and he just ran right into a shot to the head. But then Lance Archer tried to hit a cannonball, and it looked like he landed right on his head. So at times it looked like Archer might have been a little woozy. Camarado might have been a little woozy. But Archer did his signature, walking the top rope, hitting the moonsault for a two. Nice power slam by Nick Camarado for a two. Camarado, unfortunately, climbs a corner rope. You go back and you watch the finish. Camarado's sitting on the top rope. Lance Archer goes in the corner to set him up for the blackout. And you actually see Nick Camarado like, oh, do you need my arm here? I mean, he was obviously doing it under his breath. He was doing like the Chris Van Vliet. Do you need your arm here? You want on here? What's for your food? How you doing, everybody? Hit the like button. Yay! So Camarado climbs the ropes, sitting on the top rope. Lance Archer sets up the blackout, gets the win. And one thing I'll say about the buy-in tonight, they did a great job managing that hour. Exactly at every 15-minute mark, there was a match. You had the first buy-in match within the first quarter hour. Lance Archer and Camarado was the second quarter hour. You literally looked at the time, it was 7:30, and here comes match number three. Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland beating Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and El Desperado. I tell you, this crowd woke the fuck up. I mean, they were lively for the first two matches, but they really opened up for Swerve and Keith Lee. They fucking love those guys. Early on, Keith Lee wants to test his strength, but since Kanemaru is so small, he tries to climb the top rope to get a little leverage. He tries to get the upper hand, a little cheating. Unfortunately, Keith Lee catches him. Desperado and Swerve Strickland, if El Desperado is going to be in the States for another week or two, if I was AEW, give us Swerve Strickland versus El Desperado. You could see that they could do something special. The crowd was into it. Every time those two guys were working, you could see something really cool was going down. And, you know, here's another thing about El Desperado, and I looked it up, so I'm not going to be like an Excalibur and act like you're supposed to know this. I looked up a little of his history. He's got 1,000 matches under his belt, and he is a perfect example of 50-50 booking. he's got over 1,000 matches, and his winning percentage is 51-49. But he is very experienced. He's approaching 40. He can go. And the crowd liked it. Now, I know the storyline lately has been Lee and Strickland are not getting along, and a lot of people thought they were going to lose this match. And towards the end of the match, we had a little bit of referee distraction, with the referee distracted with El Desperado and Strickland outside the ring. Canamaro gets whiskey. He spits it in the face of Keith Lee. And you know, pretty much any other promotion, if you spit a foreign substance in someone's eye, you would think you spit the green mist, you spit the black mist. You'll have people get pinned where eye patches need eye surgery. They're blinded for years. But you get spit with whiskey, alcohol, big time alcohol, and you only get a 2 count. So what ends up happening, we get Swerve back in the ring. He takes out Desperado. Keith Lee with the spirit bomb on Canamaro gets the win. And this, I kind of felt bad. Will Hobbs and Starks are in the skybox. Will Hobbs gets on the mic, starts trash-talking Strickland and Keith Lee. And the crowd had no fucking idea who it was until the cameras panned on Hobbs. You go back and you watch it, it's an awkward moment. You know, maybe they're just not used to hearing Hobbs talk after how many years? But anyway, you know, since Swerve and Keith Lee, they call themselves Shaq and Kobe. Well, then Starks and Hobbs are Jordan and Pippen. So we're going to see this challenge. It's going to be a fun feud continuing, but this is their way of saying Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee are not in contention. You get the Young Bucks as tag champs. How are they going to break through? Not going to break through. Next buy-in match. This, I don't know what the hell they were trying to do here. Max Caster and the Gun Club beating the LA Dojo of Yuya Uemura, Alex Coughlin, Kevin Knight, and the DKC. We had your typical Ass Boys acclaimed Billy Gunn intro where Max Caster does his rap. You have the Ass Boys, one's yelling, Tokyo, Green Bay. They don't know where they are. And then you get Anthony Bowen shouting out Chicago. But the match starts, and Danhausen's on the screen. Now, is Danhausen supposed to be a babyface with Hook? And he goes on the screen,
I'm Ass Boys, and you know, I'm going to do something stupid. And you're going to run to the back and never come back out because I cast a spell on you.
Goes on the screen. I'm like, the fuck is this? The Ass Boys run to the back. They never come back. But still, Max Caster and Billy Gunn still win. And where the fuck does this go from here?
Now, Danhausen, he's going to get
Why? Why? Not needed. Not needed. They run to the back. They never come back out. it is your buy-in. With 34 minutes. Yes, I'm trying to keep this under an hour because I know you're all tired. I'm fucking exhausted. And this was not a pay-per-view that I really would have watched if I wasn't doing shows. I mean, I would have browsed. I mean, it would have been something I would have watched during the week at my leisure. But, you know, this was something that, you know the deal. All right, opening match, Chris Jericho, Minoru Suzuki, and Sammy Guevara versus Eddie Kingston, Wheeler Yuta, and Hota Umino. But why not? Let's add another stipulation that kind of makes you think different. Now the stipulation is the winning team has a one-man advantage of blood and guts. You couldn't tell us that the other day? I'm telling you, man. Dude, this match is going to rock. Yo, what if we did this? Yo, dude, what if we have a one-man advantage? So that's what we got. So now it obviously changes shit up. So Jericho, Minoru Suzuki, and Guevara, they beat Eddie Kingston, Willie Yuta, and Ota Umino. Yuta with some early advantage and suplexes on Jericho. Sammy Guevara is the one with the crazy heat right now. Fuck you, Sammy. Fuck you, Sammy. This match was fun, but this match, is, with the exception of Guevara, is a clear example of something. See, I'm storyline. I'm more emotion. I'm more, I want to shit on the person I don't like, and I want to cheer the people that I like. And you're watching this match, and Minoru Suzuki is on the team with Guevara and Jericho. And he's acting like a baby face during this. Now, for a majority of the match, Suzuki is going up against Kingston, which was a lot of fun. Shitload of fun. Yuta, you know, they kind of had him with Jericho. They had him for a little bit with Sammy as well. Kingston didn't have as much offense as you would think with Jericho. But there was one point where I'm watching the match and something happened tonight three times in three different matches. And it is a formula, and it is a successful formula that happens in wrestling more than you realize. If you go back and you watch the three times tonight before the main event, the three times tonight where the fans chanted, this is awesome, this is, I mean, really clear cut, the same exact segment happened in three matches. The first example was this match. We had a moment in this match where everybody got to hit a move. If you remember back in the X Division days with NWA TNA, we said everybody was the Undertaker back then. Why? Because they would get hit with somebody's finisher that in any other match, they'd stay down and get pinned. But because I gotta hit my finisher too. And they pop right up. It's like the Undertaker gets knocked down. You know, that's what it looked like. It looked like that's what the X Division used to do. They'd have a moment where every single person, one after the other, hits them finisher, hits their finisher. Now they don't do it with finishers, but they just do it with any type of move. And tonight we had a flurry where every wrestler in that six-man tag hit a move. Okay, Yuta hits a move. All right, well now Jericho hits a move. Oh, Jericho hits a move, and now Kingston hits a move. Oh, Kingston hits a move now. And everybody's laid out. This is awesome. It is a segment that is done in many, many matches. But there was a point where Umino hits a brainbuster and puts Jericho in the Walls of Jericho, and they flash the camera on Minoru Suzuki. He's just walking around ringside, just watching the match. I'm like, get a fucking bag of popcorn while you're at it. It was just, there was no heat in this match other than Sammy Guevara. Anyway, Umino, towards the end, little spitfire, gets a little offense. There is a little history with him and Jericho in Japan. Jericho beat the crap out of his father. So this is kind of like Easter eggs for a lot of people. Oh, you don't know the history. Anyway, gets a little offense on Jericho. Jericho hits a Judas effect out of nowhere for the win. So now the Jericho Appreciation Society have the one-man advantage at Blood and Guts. All right, now we start getting some guest commentators. FTR, which I think everybody expected, being in Chicago, being, you know, the buddies of CM Punk now. I mean, it was pretty much a given. FTR wins the winner-take-all match, defeating Jeff Cobb, and it's the Great Okan, Charlie Brown, and Roppongi Vice. Now, Caprice Coleman joined commentary, and Bobby Cruz did the ring introductions, which was nice. I personally would have liked to have seen, again, a New Japan referee maybe involved in this match, even if he's an outside enforcer. No New Japan referees at all. One part during the match, we had a scary moment. Dax, he had to go to the back. And if you go back and you watch it, I don't know if it was the elbow drop or something, he landed the wrong way, but they were selling that he injured his shoulder big time. They were even claiming dislocated shoulder. He had a doctor come out, got sent to the back, was gone for a while. now we're starting to think, okay, what's the backup plan? And you start thinking, oh, wow, Roppongi Vice may actually get this. They're the only team that walked in with no titles, and they may leave with two sets of titles. So anyway, during this match, Dax returns, taped up, big pop from the crowd. You watch him closely. You think that the injury was legit. Got the hot tag, is basically just doing everything right-handed. But then he hit three suplexes to Jeff Cobb. And man, did it look like he really had to do some lifting there. And if his left shoulder was dislocated or they popped it back into place, I don't think you would do three suplexes like he did to Jeff Cobb. So I'm wondering if maybe part of it is storyline. Maybe it took the focus off the match. Paul Turner, once again, really fucked up a three count towards the end of this match. But we get the big rig on Rocky Romero for the win. So, you know, that this is the one point where, you know, you saw it early on. I mean, Paul Turner, okay, it is what it is. He botched the three count really bad. Crowd got on his ass. But FTR won right after. So when I saw a few people complain online, dude, FTR won. That's all that matters. Oh, okay. Fine. No problem. You know what Paul Turner's problem is? He wants to be Earl Hebner. I mean, I know Aubrey Edwards calls herself Girl Hebner. I like that catchy. But he tries to be Earl Hebner. Because what did Earl Hebner used to do? One, two. You know, I mean, Paul Turner doesn't do the windmill. But Paul Turner, he tries to be cute with his third. The three is always faster than the first two. He'll go one, two. And he tries to be Earl Hebner-like. He tries to have that signature 2 3/4. Paul Turner, stop it. Stop it. You suck. Nothing personal. I don't want to be a referee. I don't want your job. I don't want your family. I don't want your income, your girl. I don't want nothing about you. You do a podcast, I don't know about it. It's nothing personal. You suck. You sucked in Ring of Honor. You sucked in the Indies. There is tons of footage to back it up, and you suck tonight. But FTR won, bro. So it's all that matters. So we move on because we're at 43 minutes already. Dude, Pack, not Miro, Pack. Oh, for those extended periods when Pack is overseas and you can't blame it on COVID, Pack will defend that title overseas. That's where I see them going with this. Miro, I'm not going to Bulgaria. I live in the United States. I'm not traveling overseas. Your fat ass, I'm going to go overseas. Pack. His home is abroad. So, Pac, I guess when you look at it, he was the right person to get this. And look, Pac is one of the top stars in AEW. We have bitched about how he's been used in the past. So even though my choice was Miro, I am a huge fan of Miro's. Pac winning this, I'm okay with it. Early on, Pac and Malachi Black were going at it. Clark Connors, give him credit. I mean, again, if you think about what I said earlier about video game type atmosphere, as long as Clark Connors did a good job, that crowd was going to be behind him. So he did a great job. But Miro dominated. He dominated. Every time somebody tried to hit Miro with something, he would have a counter. Especially Clark Connors. Clark Connors is hitting Miro with forearms. He's just standing there, no selling everything. He thinks he's the Bulgarian Sting. Sting eats the super kick. He stands there and clotheslines the Bucks of Youth. So anyway, Miro just dumps Clark Connors like a stack of potatoes. And you know, Pac and Malachi Black, they make music together. The moments that Miro went with Malachi Black and Miro went one-on-one with Pac was also fun. But towards the end of the match, You have Miro dumping Malakai Black to the outside. He nails Pac with a super kick and puts the game over on Pac. I think he calls it something else now, but Pac goes for the ropes. Miro gets him back in the middle of the ring, and here's Malakai Black spitting the mist. So he spits the mist, but here's that annoying mosquito, Clark Connors. And I say that complimentary. Him and Black are kind of like fumbling on the mat. I guess Malakai Black was trying to put a submission on Clark Connors. And they're conveniently rolling into the corner where Pac is. So Pac does a 450 on both of them. And then he puts the submission on Clark Connors. So Pac is now your new first ever AEW All-Atlantic champion. And the crowd chanting, you deserve it. Yeah, I kind of agree. I enjoyed this match. This was a fun match, and I give credit to Clark Connors. That'll be a name that I will remember. I mean, he didn't kill it, but he did good, and the crowd acknowledged him. And, yeah, I think all those New Japan stars, even the ones in the dojo for the buy-in, I think they should all be very, very happy for, you know, the way they performed tonight. And the crowd reaction. Crowd was very, very respectful to all of them, so... All right. Wow, I saw Bullet Club for a minute. I was like, wait a minute. I thought that was a buy-in match. Okay. Originally, we were supposed to have Takahashi, and as I said earlier, he got stuck in Japan. So the match went from a four-way to a three-way. So Hikuleo, Hikulea. He was at ringside, and he tried to get involved a few times. The beginning of this match was kind of funny. They have Sting's music, and Darby comes out. No Sting ringside yet. Bullet Club comes out. Young Bucks, El Fantasmo, Hikuleo. They're on the rampway, then the lights go out. Then they flash the light all the way in the boondocks, and the fans are chanting, holy shit, even though it's a mannequin. Now, trust me, I know some of you probably thought like me, like, holy shit, don't tell me he's coming all the way up from those rafters because there's no elevator on hand. There's no magic walkway, you know, but it's a mannequin. So as everybody is looking at his mannequin, chanting, holy shit, the lights go back on, and here is Sting standing on top of the entrance ramp, and he dives on everyone. And the crowd is going nuts. So Sting dies on all four guys. We get, you know, pretty, it's supposed to be a regular match. It's not Sting's rules. But Sting, he took some falls tonight. He did an elbow drop, did a backsplash, took a couple of back bumps. Sting, in my opinion, actually, look, you dive and you dive onto people. Yeah, it's scary to even go high that high up. But if you got a whole bunch of people catching your fall, you're not going to get hurt from it. I mean, you've seen a lot of the indie videos where people were diving onto me, and I had a couple of wrestlers back then to say, I love diving onto Don Tony. It's not a joke. I actually have the video of it because I'm this big, overweight guy that, you know, had enough strength to catch them, and you fall with them, and it's like you're falling on a, you know, a hard bunch of padding. That's what it kind of feels like. But, you know, so Sting actually worked hard tonight. But, again, you go back to the feel-good more than anything else. You go back and you watch Sting overtaking El Fantasmo, overtaking the Young Bucks. You know, he's beating the shit out of everybody. And the Young Bucks are doing their best to make it look as legit as possible. But if you focus only on the Young Bucks... They're like this, and then they'll go in the corner so they can get splash from Sting, and then they like walk a little too quickly and then kind of like do the Aubrey, you know, to wait for Sting to turn around. Then the Young Bucks both super kick Sting, and he no-sells it. And the crowd is chanting, you still got it. I remember on my hotline 20-some-odd years ago, more than 20 years ago, when WCW was first around Nitro and Hogan and everything from the late 90s on. And when you would have even Hogan, no selling, people used to be like, the fuck is this? Now, I can't criticize it because when he did it to The Rock at WrestleMania, we were all going apeshit over it. We were going bonkers. But the crowd chanting, you still got it, from no selling, you know, two super kicks. But he clotheslines both Young Bucks and then he drops to the mat. So anyway, towards the end of the match, Sting kind of exposed something about the BTE trigger that I don't think was intentional. But it's something that you got to think about going forward. Mankind, many, many years ago, Mick Foley said he thought the mandible claw was one of the stupidest moves. Because if you put it on someone, all you got to do is bite on their fingers and they're forced to break the hold. Now, you have seen some people, even Britt Baker, apply the mandible claw. Now, somebody bites on her fingers. You know, kind of like diminishes the value of the finisher. But tonight, the Young Bucks tried to hit Sting with the BTE trigger. Now, in suspension of disbelief, you're in the middle of the ring, you're on your knees, and you're expecting Excalibur to go, boom, BTE trigger. Now all you got to do is this. You just got to duck. They got to hit the BTE trigger. They hold you up, and then they let go. And then you go, all right, you're holding me up. Then you let me go. So he ducks the BTE trigger, hits a double scorpion death drop, grabs El Fantasmo by the nipples, gives him a crotch shot, kicks him in the family jewels. Darby Allin hits a coffin drop onto Hikuleo outside the ring. And Takagi with a finisher on El Fantasmo, the last of the dragon. So the dudes with attitudes get the win. Fun match. Fun match. Backstage segment later on, Jericho Appreciation Society with Hoto Omino. Oh, you did a great job tonight, kid. Oh, by the way, here's a fireball for your troubles. And he looks at the fireball. He's like, hey, what's this? And that was it. Gone. Out. Next. We're moving along. Might go slightly over an hour. Unfortunately, I don't have much to say about Thunder Rosa retaining her women's championship over Toni Storm. This was a good match. It went 10 minutes. Sign of respect before the match, sign of respect after the match. Toni Storm, I don't know what it is. I don't feel the energy like I do with Thunder Rosa. I don't know if anybody noticed that tonight. Like, she's competitive, but a lot of these matches with Toni Storm feel very one-sided, where all the energy and the fire is on Thunder Rosa's side, and the other side, it just, something is lacking. I don't know if you felt that way tonight, but it was lacking. I mean, the match was fine. You know, she hit the German suplex. She tried to hit the stuffed pile driver, but she was selling that she had, like, her shoulder was hurting, you know, selling it in the match, but she hits the final reckoning on Toni Storm, gets the win, retains. I'm glad we didn't have any clusterfuck bullshit afterwards, but it just felt, the match just felt like, okay, you want women on this show? There you go. That's what it felt like. They got 10 minutes. I don't know. It just, something felt like it was missing from the match, and not because it was the only women's match on the card. Orange Cassidy losing to Will Ospreay. Jim Ross joins commentary. Will Ospreay comes out with Aussie Open. And Will Ospreay, despite not having the IWGP US Championship yet, he came out with the Rev Pro Belt instead. You know, we had your signature Orange Cassidy comedy, but if you go back on social media, you'll see why people were going nuts for this match. Arguably, this might be the second or third favorite match of the night for everybody. In fact, from this point forward, it feels like this is what this pay-per-view was about. We had some comedy, but Ospreay is just phenomenal. it does make you wonder why this guy is not a bigger star in the United States leading up to now. He's got it. And Orange Cassidy, when he wrestles, he can go. But you have the comedy mixed into it as well. But obviously, this match was overshadowed with what happens afterwards. You get Orange Cassidy hitting a DDT and then the beach break. And the referee, once again, Paul Turner, fucks up. And when that botch happened, I paid attention to see who the referee was because I really didn't notice all that much. And I noticed Paul Turner about the camera spot that I was saying earlier afterwards because I was in a chat room tonight, little watch party, not the one we do on Tuesdays and Fridays, but little watch party chatting with a few friends. And, you know, we were complaining about the pin attempt botched once again by Paul Turner. And we're like, what the fuck's up with this guy? And then somebody said, did you see what he was doing during the camera spot? And I'm like, no, what are you talking about? It's like, go rewind it and go check out the spot when Ospreay was up on the corner and he had that corner cam, the ring post cam. He's like, just watch Paul Turner. I rewound it and I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing? But, bro, the finish was fine. Will Ospreay hits the hidden blade, only gets a two count, crowd goes nuts. But then he hits the Stormbreaker immediately after, gets the win on Orange Cassidy. Before you could think of any further, Aussie Open hits the ring, beating the shit out of Orange Cassidy. Now it feels like an episode of Dynamite again. Best Friends come out. Oh, excuse me. Rapunji Vice come out. And then here is where you get Shibata. And the crowd is just going nuts. And I don't need to repeat what I said earlier. It was a very emotional moment. And if you allow me 60, 70 seconds, I would like to just read a little something for people that don't know about what happened with him. And again, this is straight from Wiki because I don't want to make any mistakes. But at Sakura Genesis 2017, Shibata was defeated by Okada in the IWGP heavyweight title match. Following the match, he collapsed backstage and was rushed to a hospital, where it was discovered he had a subdural hematoma, which required emergency surgery. The injury was very similar with MMA fighter Kim Haig a couple of months earlier, and he died from that. Shibata's repeated use of the headbutt was partly to blame. That, combined with severe dehydration, also caused him to experience some paralysis on the right side of his body. Back then, Dave Meltzer reported in a newsletter that Shibata believed that he would never be cleared to wrestle ever again, and at that time, that was true. Then, never turned into probably. Then, probably turned into might. And then, sure enough, you know, it got where we're at now. He showed up at the G1 Climax in 2017 and he told everyone, look, I'm alive. That's all that matters. So in October of 2021, Shibata was able to get back in the ring and he fought Zack Sabre Jr. in a five-minute UWF rules exhibition, which ended in a draw. Nobody won. Afterwards, he spoke to the crowd. He felt good, but the next time he steps in the ring, it's going to be a regular wrestling match. And on December 15th of 2021, he announced that he was going to wrestle at Wrestle Kingdom 16, January 4th, 2022, which he did, and he defeated Ren Narita. So I'm giving you the short synopsis of it. And yes, it looks like we're going to go slightly over tonight. We don't have too many matches left to get into. But very emotional and great moment. Look, I like Okada. Tonight, Okada did great. Okada is better one-on-one. I think everybody that ever watched Okada matches will agree with me. One-on-one is where Okada just fucking shines. But tonight, I think probably the appearance of Shibata is what everybody will take away from this more than anything else. Zach Sabre Jr., the mystery Blackpool Combat Club member, as we said earlier, turned out to be... Oh, yeah, I got to show you this. Since February, there's been rumors that a masked cameraman keeps showing up at ringside, and since February, some people were speculating that it was Cesaro. We never talked about it because it wasn't Cesaro. Just because someone says, hey, his body looks like Cesaro. What the fuck does that actually mean? I mean, he always wore a hat. I don't recall him being bald. I mean, maybe he is bald. Maybe he didn't have a hat on sometimes. But that was the running joke. It's Cesaro tonight. Claudio, I have to get used to it. He actually was having some fun. He pointed to the cameraman. So if you're wondering why he did that, if you didn't know, now you know. Mike says Becky loved it. Oh, a lot of people in WWE loved it. Claudio is one of the most liked wrestlers, period. As long as you're not Eddie Kingston. Don't forget, Eddie Kingston and Claudio are going to be on the same team Wednesday. If you don't know the history of Claudio and Eddie Kingston, I guarantee you that will be played into storyline in AEW Dynamite. This was a phenomenal match. Crowd is chanting, this is wrestling. They loved it. You could see that Claudio was taking it in. There are some wrestlers that actually prefer to wrestle in front of a Japanese audience, a Ring of Honor audience, a pure wrestling audience. Not everybody fits in at sports entertainment. Some people adapt. You see it with Sami Zayn, you see it with Kevin Owens, you see it with some others. But for not every wrestler can or wants to adapt, especially when you know that Claudio is one of the most smoothest, talented wrestlers out there. And he couldn't break through that brass ring because he is not the quintessential sports entertainer. So I think his smiles and his happiness tonight was really heartfelt, sincere. And trust me, 99% of the pro wrestling world, people in the business, were so happy for that man tonight. And guess what? About a month ago, there was a lot of rumors that, you know, he wasn't getting receptive, you know, from the indie world and beyond. But AEW came in and made an offer. So keep in mind also, I mean, it could have happened. Now, we're live, so obviously... By the way, the first 7 minutes of the show, we didn't talk about matches. So I still have 5 minutes left. We'll probably spend extra five, but we'll be close. But as of the beginning of this show, I did not see Tony Khan post a banner that Claudio Castagnoli is All Elite. By now, it might be online. Maybe someone that I trust could check in the live chat. But I have not seen that yet. So... we'll see. Maybe before the end of the show, we will know if that has happened. But this was an excellent match. To me, it went maybe 10 minutes too long. It went 18 minutes, everybody. I mean, you would think somebody that is going to be in a Blackpool, like I said earlier, in a combat club, feuding with the Jericho Appreciation Society, I would think, with all due respect to Zack Sabre Jr., because once again, this is Tony Khan. We don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. He doesn't want to tell someone, unless you're Wardlow squashing security guys or a bullshit person, you know, unless your character and storyline is designed for a two-minute match, he doesn't have the heart to say to everyone, say, look, you're going to wrestle 8 minutes tonight. That's it? No, it's like... 15 minutes, 18 minutes, 21 minutes, 19 minutes. You know, sometimes someone's got to show a little dominance. This match, in my opinion, went too long. At the beginning of the match, he came out a spitfire. We thought he was going to win. Richard Adams says Tony Khan said he signed him weeks ago. Anyone else out there hear him say, could confirm that? Sam says, yes, he's All Elite, fine. But wait a minute. This chat room, do you remember a couple of weeks ago, Tony Khan say, I would think that this would have been a big story all over. Like, when is Cesaro going to debut? When is Claudio going to debut? When is Claudio going to debut? I do not remember that. You could be right. I'm not discounting you. But I would think that if Claudio was signed to AEW weeks ago and Tony Khan said that, then it would have been discussed. It would have been discussed. Maybe someone will bring it up in the media scrum, but a few people are saying that he is all elite. I personally believe that he is. I want to make this clear. I don't want anybody to, you know, but I want it to be official. I want to see the graphic. I don't want somebody to Photoshop it like they do it. Mercedes Varnado is all elite. You know, I want to see it from AEW. So by now, maybe it was there. But look, you don't put him in the Blackpool Combat Club. You don't put him in this match tonight just to say, like, no, we haven't worked out a deal yet. He's on a pay-per-view. He's got the Roosh deal right now. But this was a fun match. In the end, you know, Claudio early tried to tease the swing, hit it five times, had to stop selling his bicep that it was sore because Zack Sabre Jr. was working on it during the match. But towards the end, beautiful uppercut, almost like the JBL clothesline, into the arm trap powerbomb, and Claudio gets the win over Zack Sabre Jr. By the way, I really enjoyed Kevin Kelly's commentary tonight. Very smooth. I enjoyed everybody. Taz was great. I mean, Taz, you know, I still remember his days in SmackDown. Cole! Taz was great tonight. Charlie, yes, they do radiation seeds. Do Google check. They do. I don't want to get snipped. I don't want to get snipped for the prostate issues. As someone said, then it's like having sex with a rope. You know, I don't want anybody. Do we have to get that technical? Jay White retains the IWGP Championship, defeating Okada, Adam Cole, Hangman Page. This match was fun. It followed similar formulas of what we said earlier. By the way, the other match that did everybody hit their moves and then everybody's laid out and the crowd chants, this is awesome. The second match was Pac, Miro, Clark Connors, and Malakai Black. It happened in this match as well. During the match, every person, one after the other, hitting a move, all four laid out in the ring. This is awesome. It's a formula that now, since we've talked about it, you will notice it. You will notice it in four ways. In tag team matches where each individual person hits a move, trios matches, you will see everybody hit a move one after the other. Bang, boom, bang. It's like an old Batman show. And then everybody's laid out. This is all, it's like clockwork. Trust me, when they plan out the match, oh, we could do this. Everybody hits their move, they lay down the ring. You know the crowd is going to go, this is awesome. Okada, yes, Okada tonight did look like a star. He has a presence. He has had insane matches in his career. The guy is legit. In my opinion, as I said earlier, Okada is better on a one-on-one match than a four-way. This match was okay. I mean, everybody fought hard early on. You had Jay White and Adam Cole working together. And then ultimately, Adam Cole backstabs Jay White by hitting him with a backstabber. You had points where Hangman Page tried to hit the buckshot lariat. But Gato, you know, tried to. Thank God we didn't get any fucking Brandon Cutler stuff tonight or anything. But Gato trying to stop Hangman Page part of the match. But later on, Hangman Page hits the deadeye into the buckshot and almost gets a pin attempt. But Okada breaks it up. But everybody will remember this match for the ending. You got to go back and you got to watch it. First of all, I hope Adam Cole is okay. And I want to repeat this. A year ago, we talked about Adam Cole's physical appearance. So it's old discussion for all of us. But now it's a hot topic again because you have people like Booker T and others who I respect. And this, and Booker T saying, like, look, you're that small in this net, you know, you could be more prone to injury. Something happened towards the end of the match tonight. I almost feel like AEW's got to turn into a storyline. They almost have to. You can't just turn around, bro, dude, we just got Okada, Jay White, Hangman Page. Dude, let it go. What happened towards the end of this match, and you really need to go back and you need to look at it. Not only did we get another issue, you know, in the match, but towards the end of the match, Adam Cole is in the middle of the ring with Okada. And Okada tries to hit the Rainmaker, but Adam Cole gets out of the way. And if you look closely, Adam Cole stumbles to one knee. And then the focus is off of Adam Cole. Adam Cole is in the corner now, laid out on the mat. Just, you go back and you watch it. He escapes the Rainmaker, drops to like his knee, and then he like goes to the mat and is in the corner. Jay White actually gets Okada out of there. And if you go back and you watch it, and I saw, again, the Cool Kids Club, I'm not going to bring this up. Adam Cole rolls himself towards the middle of the ring, and Jay White pins him. No finisher, no nothing. Again, Adam Cole ducks the Rainmaker, stumbles to like one knee, lays down, goes in the corner, and Jay White like goes to like, you know, like when you, if anybody checks out Jim Cornette shows, one of his biggest pet peeves is when you whip somebody into the ropes, you're supposed to grab them and you're supposed to like push them, and the momentum, they run into the ropes. And sometimes you'll just see somebody go like this, and it's like they got blown away by a tornado. Tonight, Jay White went to grab Adam Cole. Adam Cole rolled himself towards Jay White and got pinned. And people were like, the fuck was that? Then the Young Bucks immediately come down to the rampway, and there's a whole bunch of people surrounding Adam Cole in the corner of the ring. Now you're saying to yourself, I hope he's okay. Then you get the dickheads online. You see, Booker T was right. See, he's fucking scrawny. His body's starting to break down. He walked to the back on his own. So I don't know what transpired, but, you know, this was not a headshot. This was a, you know, lower limb. And even if something, you know, just collapsed on him, you know, why roll? He just rolled himself perfectly and got pinned. I almost feel like they may have to turn this into a storyline. Here's the problem with that. Is Jay White going to be sticking around for a little while? If he's not sticking around for a little while, does that even matter? You go back and you watch it, like, what the fuck did I just see? It's a really weird way to finish. And I got news for you. If this was a storyline, which I don't believe it was, that is a fucking stupid, dopey storyline with Okada in the goddamn match. With Okada in that match. And you do that, I don't believe it's storyline. But it was awful. It was awful. And we're just telling it like it is. So now we got the main event. Now at this point, you know, I'm setting up for this show, so I didn't take any notes in this match. I will tell you that this match was fine. It was very physical. John Moxley bled. You know, early on, you had Tanahashi get the upper hand, and it's back and forth. I like Tanahashi. Moxley loves Tanahashi, highly respects Tanahashi. Hearing the fans in unison chanting for Tanahashi, again, I'm not criticizing Tanahashi, and I'm not criticizing Japanese wrestling, but this is for the fucking AEW Interim Championship. Explain to me why any New Japan Pro Wrestling, not roster wrestler, should even be in a AEW Heavyweight Championship match. To hear that crowd in unison chanting for Tanahashi, fight forever, I'm being just me as a wrestling fan. I'm rooting for fucking Moxley all the way. I respect Tanahashi. I love his work. I'm not a big fan of New Japan. When I watch him wrestle, I like what I see. But why the fuck would I be rooting for him to win in this match? That's the problem that I had with this pay-per-view. And it happens a lot with AEW. You know, this isn't like the Vince McMahon promo from 1995, you know, or 1997. You know, the idea of good guy versus bad guy is passé. No. Why the fuck would I want Tanahashi to be AEW champion? Seriously. You know, I mean, I think some people, you know, where the fuck are they going to... People complained. People complained about New Japan wrestlers in the All-Atlantic Championship Tournament. But yet, I'm fine. Why? Because Moxley highly respects Tanahashi. This was a fun brawl. The only thing I didn't like was the focus on the false finishes. I don't mind 2 7/8. I don't mind 2 99 100. I don't mind 2 3/4. But when it seems like you're focused more of having people, you know, this isn't just, what do they call that with sex? Edging? You know, is this Tony Khan's version of edging with these matches? You know, just don't give us a hardcore brawl and just fucking kill each other. No. You know, right before Moxley blows his load, you know, we'll edge it. You know, 1, 2. Like Keith Lee gets whiskey put in his face. Black mist, green mist, red mist, Muda mist, Asuka mist, Malakai Black legitimately missed. And I spell it M-I-S-S-E-D. Hit Brian Pillman Jr. in the forehead. And everybody's blinded and they can't. Keith Lee gets whiskey. I'm like, hey, here comes the 2 count. You know, this was edging tonight. There, it's more about, no. We can't just let them have a big, wild brawl. Yeah, a couple of 2 counts. But it felt like more like, oh, let me mentally edge these motherfuckers. Let's just focus on that. And to me, it took away from the match. Has anybody ever heard a podcast? I never in a million years ever thought on a podcast I would compare a wrestling match to edging. But that's, if there's any way for me to compare that tonight, that's what that seemed like tonight, especially in that match. And guess what? Referee fucked up again. And guess who it was? Paul Turner. Moxley wins. Then afterwards, oh, we got blood and guts. So turns into a major clusterfuck. Please. I respect anyone who is a hardcore AEW fan out there. But please, go back and look at that crowd after the match was over. Don't tell me, oh, it's 11:40 p.m. Everybody's tired. They just want to go home. No, they were fucking losing their shit every time they were getting edged in that match. Soon as the match is over, and here comes the Jericho Appreciation Society. Here comes Yuta Michinoku. Oh, here comes this. Now the crowd, you know, common sense, Claudio, his music hits. Claudio runs down to the ring. I saw the big crowd. I'm like, oh my God, nobody is reacting. Until he went at it with Jericho, and everybody was losing their lunch. Why? Go back and look at it. It just felt like, oh, we're right back. It, you know, like, NWO segments remind me of that back in the day. But it was different climate, different people. But when there's... I'm not going to lie to you. Going in to the latter part of tonight, one of the things that I was planning to say to everyone was, wow, we've had very few clusterfuck interferences. Yes, we got it, which led to Shibata coming out, but that felt a little bit different. But I was going into later on saying, well, we didn't get what we've been seeing on this Dynamite. It's been pretty manageable. And then we got that. Yes, I know the pay-per-view was already over, but, you know, this is, again, and we talked about it yesterday. I don't want to repeat yesterday, but, you know, this was Tony Khan basically saying, no, I'm not waiting a week to hype up Blood and Guts, because he doesn't want a crappy rating bouncing off from Blood and Gut. I mean, from Forbidden Door. So let's just hype up Rage in the Cage, Quake at the Lake, Schmuck with a Duck, Blood and Guts. This was a horrible build to Wednesday. And it feels like that one-man advantage crap that they did tonight was just to try to add more suspense and hype to it. Now, will we get a few people on Dynamite from today that are part of New Japan? It is possible. Would Shibata actually wrestle? I don't know. But I personally feel, and I'll leave you with these two things. I personally feel, number one, after this Wednesday, all due respect, no insults intended. After Wednesday, I don't want to fucking hear about New Japan Pro Wrestling on AEW television for quite some time. Focus on AEW, not fucking Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor is still a dead promotion. You bought the belts, you're putting them on your TV. You're not doing anything. That's focus on AEW. That's number one. You want to have some Japanese wrestlers Wednesday? They're going to stick around, work GCW, CZW, ABC, whatever it is. Fine. After Wednesday, I don't want to hear about New Japan for a while. Number two, if they're going to do something with MJF, they need to do it within the next 14 days. I don't believe the ratings have drastically gone down because of CM Punk's injury of Brian Day. They got so many bullets there. They got so many darts, ammunition. They got so many top stars there. One goes down, someone picks up on it. Don't give me that. Don't give me that. Because there are so many people that they signed that could deliver. And we have others. But I personally think they need to speed that up a little bit if they are. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I give tonight's show an 8. It was a fun night. It was great wrestling. There was no storylines for the most part. It did not feel like AEW versus New Japan. It just felt like, oh, let's all work together. It's almost like let's all play softball against each other. And, you know, even though we're on opposite teams, like somebody hits a home run in the opposite team and you're kind of like to yourself like this, you know, like it just felt like no tension, no heat. You know, it just, and the crowd represented that as well. And that's AEW's fault. Just, I leave you with one last thing. Think about the last 3 weeks of Dynamite with all the interference by New Japan guys. Every New Japan star attacked an AEW star. Did it feel like tonight, like AEW was getting revenge on New Japan, that they were battling for bragging rights? They didn't do any of that. Tonight was, dude, bro, this is fucking awesome. Bro, we're getting fantasy matches, bucket list matches. This was fucking great. You see what that guy did? What Minoru Suzuki was doing, walking around the ringside, just watching a match while his partners are getting their ass kicked. Jericho was in the Walls of Jericho. And he was just walking around ringside like, hey, how you doing? Hey, what's going on? You know, I was about a little bit of vibe, like, wow, you know, some bragging rights here. Didn't feel that way at all. It just felt like, hey, with the softball. But I'll add one thing to it. We're going to do a softball game. We got all these AEW guys, and we got some Japanese baseball players as well. And everybody can be picked. Tony Khan is one coach. and I'm the other coach. One, two, three, shoot. Oh, you get the first pick. And because Tony Khan is AEW, most of the people he picks is AEW, but he picks a couple of Japan wrestlers as well. And I pick some Japanese wrestlers too and some AEW heels. And then whatever the teams line up, they are. And let's have a fun game. I want to see friction, competition, anger, because that's all we've gotten over the last 3 weeks. This person interferes, this person interferes, this person shows up, this person attacks, this person does this. All is New Japan. Everybody's attacking everybody. And tonight, none of that emotion was felt in that crowd. So, but still, for the wrestling quality, 8 out of 10. My favorite match of the night. Boy, this is a tough one, man. This is a real tough one. You know what? My favorite match of the night, I know you're going to get mad at me. I got to go with Will Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy. I know a lot of Orange Cassidy stuff is stupid. I understand that. But Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy really worked awesome together tonight. And as crazy as that sounds, I got to go with that match. My least favorite match of the night, I'm not counting buy-in. My least favorite match of the night is probably Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm. Something was off again, and I don't know what it is, but that match kind of fell flat for me. So, all right, I'm going to jet out of here because don't forget tomorrow night, and I know for people that watch this later on, you know, right now it's Sunday night, 1:15 in the morning, June 27th. So we have WWE Raw coming up, and we're going to be right here live Monday night after Raw to cover that. Some news, anything that comes out of tonight's show. And, yeah, we got a pretty hectic week here. So let me know who you thought. It'll take a couple of moments in the comment section. Tell me your favorite match, least favorite match. Not only are you showing it to me, but you're showing it to everyone else out there as well. If there's anything that you disagreed with me tonight, speak out. What do you think about Paul Turner? Am I being really, too rough on this guy? You know, if you notice my shows, I usually never, ever call for someone, you know, to be just taken out of their position. But what I watched tonight, it's not acceptable. And this is not the first time. And I think just that, between the Cool Kids Club just being too afraid to criticize and others that, you know, just like, oh, no. I mean, it's laid back, but gets to a point where, you know, it's not acceptable. This is not the indies. This is not developmental. You know, this is the creme de la creme. And, you know, there's a few individuals, and I think he's at the top of his list. I thought his performance was horrendous. And it's not the first time that this happened. It's happened countless times before. So, all right, everybody. Thank you, everyone in the chat, for the kind words. You know, like I said, I was not wanting to take notes tonight. I wasn't going to take any. I ended up taking 7 pages worth. And there's still probably a lot of things that I could have still talked about tonight. But hopefully I gave you a thorough review. It went a little over 60. I might have to take that logo and the thumbnail and flip it upside down. I'm not kidding. You'll probably see the thumbnails later on updated, and it'll be like recap in 90, not 60. But all right, everybody. Be well. Much love. If you're around Monday night after Raw, join me here live. If you're not a subscriber yet, consider subscribing. It's free. And we'll have a good week, everybody. I hope you all had a great weekend, and enough of me ranting. Time for me to get some sleep. Be well, everybody.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today, everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.